Introduce yourselves, please.
I'm Brian Lowry with the Wichita Eagle.
I'm Michael Smith. I'm a professor of political science at Emporia State.
We have a lot to talk with you guys about, but first, we're going to hear the open. This is Statehouse Blend. I'm Sam Zeff. We're using coffee and donuts to help us better understand the historic legislative session underway in Topeka. The issues and the people in the Kansas legislature. Here we go. So today we're a few days past oral arguments in the Gannon School funding case. And I wanted to just briefly recap the hearing and then move on to how all of this is going to play in the fall elections. So I want to start with you, Brian. You covered the hearing. I want to know what particularly stuck out with you.
One thing that stuck out to me was the fact that I think it's clear that the justices didn't accept the state's argument that one-third of students underperforming is acceptable, but they also didn't appear ready to just go ahead and approve the trial court's decision, which was to put another $800 million into school funding.
Right. I mean, I think that one of the things we heard, especially from Justice Dan Biles, was it was somewhat buying the state's argument that if you've got a third of students who are not succeeding, maybe we need to target the money there. Is that what you're thinking?
Justice Biles was very specific that if the court does hand down a solution, it can't just be a blank check, that it has to be connected specifically to helping that third of students who aren't at grade level. And a lot of statistics were thrown out. You can find these statistics from the Kansas Department of Education, but you look at the different subjects, you look at the different grade levels, and it is true that in a lot of areas, whether it's reading, whether it's math, you have somewhere in the 30-35% range of students are not performing at grade level in Kansas. And that's really the question before the court is, can we say that school funding is adequate when a third of our students aren't at grade level?
Right. That leads me into a little clip of tape I want to play. This is Solicitor General Stephen McAllister. This is right near the end of his argument where they were talking about whether or not that this one-third of students that we've been talking about, whether money should be or resources be targeted towards them. And this was one of the suggestions he made.
I mean, I think of my own children's school in Lawrence, loaded with AP courses in high school. I mean, I wouldn't want to see it happen, but it seems to me the AP courses are way above and beyond Rose capacities. And if money needs to be moved around within the school district, but my point being, there are probably more ways than one to address this. If the court thinks there's a constitutional adequacy, it is not simply a huge amount of new money. That might be, that's the panel's view, but there are lots of other ways the legislature might address a problem if, in fact, the court thinks one exists.
Michael, I want to go to you. So his argument there was, well, if you have to put more resources there, maybe we can just move money around through the system. He suggested getting rid of advanced placement courses. I want to know how that sits with you as an educator and at a school that turns out a lot of Kansas teachers. What do you think about moving money from one segment to another?
As a professor, Sam, don't get me started on AP courses. They are very controversial among us faculty. That's a box of worms right there. But as far as the money issue, I understand the logic of the quote. I think what we're really running into is politics, that Kansas, like Missouri and many other states, have found in, 10, 20 or more years ago when they did come up with a school-based funding formula, that it's much easier to bring the lower-income schools up than to push the higher-income schools down. Just politically, the higher-income schools are fiercely defended by their voters. They're in communities like Johnson County and Lawrence with high voter turnout. And they might pay a little more taxes to help other schools. They will not see the funding cut for their schools. In fact, that's why a lot of the moderates swept statehouse races in Johnson County. They hammered on schools, and they weren't talking about the schools in Wyandotte County or in Emporia. They were talking about their own schools.
It would be a pretty politically fraught situation to just say, okay, we're going to cut this however many million dollars from AP courses. AP courses, I think, with parents are very popular. One, they know it looks good on their child's high school transcript when they're applying for college. But it also means in a lot of cases, if the kids test high enough on the AP exam, you're looking at knocking maybe a semester of college off if the kids can build up enough college credit from it. So they're very popular, I think, especially with very middle-class parents. And, you know, there's been some of those attempts to roll back Common Core. The reason they've hit a roadblock in the past is because the way the legislation was crafted, it would have impacted AP courses as well. And that was enough to stop that in the tracks. And, you know, on my way out of the courthouse, I talked to Representative Melissa Rooker, who's from Johnson County, and she certainly says that she does not want to take money from AP. She thinks that's an outrageous suggestion, and that whatever solution they do, she doesn't want to bring the two-thirds of students who are succeeding down to help that one-third. So it's going to be interesting to see exactly how the court rules, how much guidance they give the legislature, and how the legislature, which is going to have a lot of freshmen in it, is able to deal with that guidance. And I don't know, it's very unclear to me right now what exactly the court is going to tell them. Sometimes you can read the tea leaves, but they're murky this time.
Well, I think it's always a little bit difficult to read the tea leaves. I think, though, that given past rulings on equity, that I think a lot of people, and I want to hear your opinions on this, believe that it would be not very likely that they would say adequacy is okay. Do you think that, Michael?
I haven't been following the court closely enough to read any tea leaves, but you're hitting on a debate that your listeners should know about. It came up in Missouri when they passed their funding formula when Matt Blunt was governor, and it's going to come up in Kansas, and that's the adequacy versus equity debate. And essentially, the argument is, do you look at school districts that you benchmark by various indicators as high performing and use those to develop a formula for what you call an adequate education with adjustments for kids on free reduced student lunches and higher costs of living areas and things like that? But basically, the idea is, what does it cost for an adequate education? That's the state's obligation, and after that, they're done. That's the adequacy approach. Or do you look at the spending gap between the wealthiest and the poorest school districts, and that's the equity approach. And that's going to be huge when we go to write a new school-based funding formula, possibly in 2017.
Right.
My sense, based on the court's previous actions and based on my conversations with lawmakers, is that the court probably will hand down a ruling that will strongly imply that the legislature has to spend more money. But I don't think the court's going to put a specific dollar amount on it. They've been hesitant to do that in the past with equity. While their rulings have always certainly implied a specific dollar amount that then people can calculate, you'll never find that dollar amount in the ruling itself. So, you know, most lawmakers I talk to, whether they're Democrats, Republicans, conservatives, moderates, they're kind of expecting that the court is going to hand down a ruling that requires the state to spend more money. And that's going to be very difficult because the truth is that Kansas doesn't have much money to spare.
Right. You did a story this week saying that the ending balance could be not pennies, but in terms of a state budget, almost pennies.
Right. It's legislative research. We have a nonpartisan legislative research department in Kansas. They put out an updated memo of budget projections, and that showed the state having $5.6 million in its general fund at the end of the fiscal year, which is June. Having $5.6 million in the general fund, you might as well have $5 in the general fund in terms of when you're talking about state government. But the other thing is that didn't take into account, that memo doesn't take into account the fact that we've already missed revenue projections in July and August.
First 2 months of the fiscal year.
And unless we reverse that trend, we're going to be far below that $5.6 million. Right now, we're on pace to be about in a $20 million budget hole. And so I think it's very likely that more budget cuts are on the way, possibly before the legislature even convenes in January.
Michael, I want to get to the politics now. And I'm wondering your thoughts on the retention election. I want to break this up into two pieces. First, the justices' retention, and then how school funding is going to play into the legislative elections. But let's start with retention. It seems to me that of the three issues that folks are using to campaign against four of the five justices, school funding, school finance is chief among them. What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that getting into this issue is kind of getting into the weeds. First of all, in the Kansas Speak surveys out of the Docking Institute at Fort Hays State, they've, surprise, surprise, shown voters just unhappy across the board. But when you break it down, who do you hold more responsible for the school funding problems, the courts or the legislature? A majority of the voters chose the legislature as being more responsible. So that's risky, and that's risky for the conservative Republican majority to be hitting on that. There's another issue.
Now, when you say risky, yeah, what does that mean in terms of retention? Does that mean that maybe as they campaign against these justices, that using school finance may be counter to their argument, may not help them in that regard?
May blow up on them. Mm-hmm. Conservatives, staunch conservatives, like this red meat. You know, it was an issue here in Kansas City years ago with the federal judge on the Casey DeSig cases, and now we see it in Kansas. Conservatives do not believe that courts should be ruling on funding, that appropriating money is done by the legislature, period, end of story. The legislature or the courts interpret the Constitution. However, most others believe those two things kind of bleed into each other. If you don't have adequacy or equity, take your pick in the schools, for example. Prison overcrowding would be another example. But I don't see the polling data to indicate that hitting on this school funding thing is going to be a winner for the people that wants to turn the judges out. I think they're going to go to the Carr Brothers case instead.
Right. I think they're going to the Carr Brothers case, which if any of your listeners are not familiar, it's a very famous case from Wichita, a series of murders that happened in Wichita about 16 years ago. And the court in 2014, well, it didn't overturn the convictions, and that's very important to clarify for people.
Yes.
It did vacate the death sentences, you saying that the two brothers should have been given different sentencing hearings. The U.S. Supreme Court overturned that earlier this year, and so those death sentences are now seem to be going forward. But it's a case they're using certainly against the justices in Wichita. Whether that's going to have as big an impact in the rest of the state, I don't know. But there's a clear sense that they're going to use the death penalty. They're going to use a lot of criminal justice issues. The House Republicans actually sent out an email this past week
with a new case that
right.
We have not heard very much about until they sent out their email.
Right, involving the justices basically overturning part of a rape case, overturning a conviction once again because of procedural issues. So I think there's really this very clear there's basically the message that you see. Conservatives trying to mount against the justices is that these justices are soft on crime. They don't want to throw the book at criminal offenders. And, you know, that could be effective. We saw in 2014, while the two justices who were up for retention that year were retained, it was by a much closer margin than in previous years. It was about by a you know, you need over 50% to be retained.
It was 52 or 53%.
It was about 52, 53. And that was when you also had a gubernatorial race, a senatorial race. A lot more resources can be put into these judicial retention races this time around since they're basically the biggest game in town this year.
I want to get back to school funding because I think the death penalty and also abortion, I think that's worthy of its own episode. I want to get back to the hearing very quickly with you, Brian. You know, one of the things that you can do in the Kansas Supreme Court is record audio and video. And I have to think that the anti-retention forces had to be sitting, listening to the questions of the justices closely to see what, if anything, they may be, you know, that we may see in an ad. Do you think that, did you hear a question go by that you thought was particularly controversial or something that that the anti-retention forces could latch onto?
You know, I actually thought the justices were pretty straight down the middle. Some of the past hearings on equity, it's been pretty clear that they're not that they can't even stomach the state's case. This one was, I think, you saw, I think, the justices press the school district's attorney a little bit. You saw them press the Solicitor General. There may be some line that I'm not thinking of, but one moment that did stick out to me was, at one point, Justice Eric Rosen did say, "I know that you're frustrated. We're frustrated too," and I think that was a moment that I don't know if it can be used against him in an ad, but it did kind of encapsulate the fact that I think people on all sides of this issue are a little bit frustrated that we've spent 6 years in Kansas fighting about school funding. Now, some people blame the legislature, some people blame the court. Some people blame the school districts, and some people blame the governor. Maybe some people blame all of them. But it's certainly this, it's, you know, I've been covering the State House for 3 years now, and there's not been a year that's gone by yet where I haven't had to write about a school finance controversy.
Multiple times you have to write about that. Michael, I want to, you know, in Kansas, this is, retention is not like a regular campaign, right? You don't see justices out there campaigning for themselves. And I know it's hard to get inside their heads, but you would suspect that just human nature, you would think that they went into this oral argument on Wednesday knowing that they're under a microscope, that people could easily parse every word, every question that they say. Explain to me what you think about how they have to go about keeping their jobs. It must be difficult.
Well, actually, I saw the campaign launched just the other day in Salina. Former Governors Graves and Carlin, a Democrat and a Republican, Republican and a Democrat, technically. Current Supreme Court Justice Lawton Nuss, a retired Supreme Court Chief Justice, and another current member of the Supreme Court, really kind of launched the campaign with sort of a press conference. And they were very careful to hit issues of judicial independence. It is illegal for the current judges to discuss any case before the court or that could potentially come before the court. So they have to totally stay out of it. They can't talk about the Carr brothers. They can't talk about school finance. Not a word. And they didn't. They didn't. Now, the governors did bring that up, and that's handy to have two governors from opposite parties that are there to pick that slack up. But, you know, in some states they elect their judges. Arkansas would be an example. Mm-hmm. In some states they even run on a partisan ticket. But I think a lot of people that are used to the merit selection plan that Kansas uses think it's unseemly for judges to actively campaign for public office. And usually retention elections are sort of an afterthought. Some people don't vote in them at all, and some people figure, I've never heard of that person, so they must not have done anything wrong, and just vote yes on all of them. And you don't get a lot of no votes unless a judge has done something really controversial. So this is new for the judges, and they have to walk a fine line. First of all, they don't want to break the law. Second of all, they don't want to appear to break the law because the anti-retention people will be all over that. And third of all, there's just a sense of decorum, I think, that voters expect of judges. You're not supposed to be on the stump. You're supposed to be objectively interpreting the state constitution.
I think there is an implicit message by the pro-retention side. Not the judges themselves aren't doing that messaging, but some of the people who have stepped up to do that, including not just Graves and Carlin, but also former governors Sebelius and Hayden have also been.
They were on a little
speaking
tour
out on that.
The state,
yeah. The implicit message is don't let Sam Brownback appoint the majority of the Kansas Supreme Court, but they've been shying away from really saying that explicitly. Partially because they're trying to frame it as a nonpartisan issue, but that really is what.
Now, those governors have, but I've done interviews with Ryan Wright, who is running the pro-retention campaign, and he was quite explicit that if you get rid of these justices, then you're handing that many appointments to Governor Brown back. So maybe as we get closer to the election, they're getting just a little bit testier, maybe.
Right. I think the winning message for the anti-retention side is to focus on these issues like death penalty and abortion. I don't think school finance is the winning issue for them, but I do think school finance is a winning issue for the pro-retention side. And I do think the idea of don't let Sam Brownback, who any polling data will tell you is not very popular right now, I think making it say, hey, these judges they've been the check on Sam Brownback. They've been the check on the conservative legislature that you're not happy with. I think that's the message that the pro-retention side has to make if they don't want to be bogged down in fighting about each of these individual criminal cases and making it into an abortion debate. I think they want to tether it to this kind of, this is the branch of government that has been the check on the other two right now.
School finance, and by extension the Gannon case, I think played a huge role in the primary election in August, turned out a lot of conservatives, especially here in Johnson County. But I also think in other parts of the state, conservatives, I think, have a lot of competitive races, including Ron Hyland, who is the chairman of the House Education Committee. So, Michael, I'm wondering, how much does Gannon and school finance, do you think, play into the general election that's coming up?
Well, it looks to me like that with school financing, the conservatives don't have a winning hand. They've got their clock cleaned in the primaries. I told you about the docking survey showing more people blame the legislature than the courts. And I even wonder, the cynical part of me, if there isn't a little bit of political strategy here, that maybe they don't think they have the votes to turn the judges out. They're throwing some red meats at conservatives so that they'll show up and vote. Because the totally bizarre presidential race we have has people worried that their base won't show up and vote. Sometimes in states like Missouri that have the initiative or the referendum, you'll put things on the ballot that will either pass easily and probably aren't necessary, or that probably won't pass, but it'll get your base out to show up and vote.
Yeah, I believe the only statewide ballot initiative this year is making it the constitutional amendment, which would declare a specific right under the Kansas Constitution to hunt, fish, and trap. And I think that will pass.
There you go.
But I don't know if the "we must be allowed to fish" is enough to get like a wide swath of voters to the poll.
Well, I just want to say that's a rallying cry in Minnesota, but I'm not so sure that it is down here. Brian, I want to get your thought real quick on the same question. How will school finance and Gannon, and nobody expects a ruling until after the election. I suspect before the legislative session we'll get a ruling. But how do you think it's going to play into the general election?
It's going to be interesting. I think first in the primaries where we saw moderates pick up or oust a couple incumbents, they really did this message of we're for schools, we're for fair taxes, we're for stable budgeting, we're going to allow your schools to be funded, we want to increase school funding. The Democrats have a similar message. And I think there's some conservative incumbents who didn't face that strong moderate challenger in the general election who now have some really difficult general election challenges ahead of them. Mary Pilcher Cook in Johnson County, you know, the polling data that's been released on that shows that to be a highly competitive race. There's some competitive races in Wichita. So you might see the Democrats pick up a couple seats. There's also this wild card of now we have the races between the moderates and the Democrats. And those two camps are trying to they both are adopting the same message of we don't like Sam Brownback, which is what the moderates are saying. And then the Democrats are saying, we don't like him more than you guys.
Right.
And there's a little bit of a debate going on of who is going to be the true wedge against Brownback and also who is going to be able to pass legislation to roll back some of the things that have happened in the past few years. And right now I'm very unsure about how that debate, how that goes, what the kind of the battle between the moderates and the Democrats. But it's very clear that we're going to be looking at a very different legislature next year with a lot of freshman lawmakers.
Right. But we both are we in agreement here that we will continue to hear a lot about school finance as we head into the into the fall election?
We haven't even written a new formula yet.
Right.
We will continue to hear a lot about school finance for the next 30 years at the very least. I mean, it's an ever present issue in Kansas politics, and part of that is because of the constitutional requirement. And so that was to me one of my favorite moments in the hearing the other day. At one point the justices did say to the plaintiff's attorney, "Well, when will we know that the issue has been resolved?" And Alan Roop, the attorney for the school district, said, "When we stop filing lawsuits." He said something to that effect. And it was just kind of a perfect moment.
Gentlemen, we're going to leave it there. I'm a little bit smarter about the Gannon school funding case than I was 20 minutes ago. Brian Lowry from the Wichita Eagle, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Michael Smith, professor of political science at Emporia State, thank you. So this is where we turn the podcast over to you guys. And you guys are going to both nominate a song for our walk-off music. I am going to declare myself a superdelegate, and I will be the sole judge of which song we're going to walk off with. Brian Lowry, we're going to start with you.
So I got to go back to Pennsylvania last weekend and visit my nephew. And there is he's 8 months old at this point. And there is a song that I do sing to him. It's from one of my favorite movies when I was a kid. And that is the song Bare Necessities from The Jungle Book. So I will nominate the song Bare Necessities, which I think is pretty apt right now in Kansas politics, but I'll nominate Bare Necessities as a tribute to my nephew, Charlie.
And one day he's going to grow up and vote in a partisan judge election there in Pennsylvania. Always ugly from my time in Pennsylvania. Michael Smith, what song is on your mind?
I think in honor of the return of the moderate Republicans in Kansas, I will nominate the song Heathens by 21 Pilots.
I'm going with Heathens. Michael Smith, thank you. Brian Lowry, thank you. State House Blend is produced by Matt Hodapp. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Our friends over there at UpToDate, they clear a little room out for us every Tuesday at 11 a.m. You a fan of the Twitter? I'll bet you are. You can follow me. I'm at Sam Zeff. My co-host, Brian Ellison, who keeps track of the craziness over there in Missouri, he's at PTS Brian. I'm Sam Zeff. I'll see you around the radio. All my friends are heathens, take it slow. Wait for them to ask you who you know.